Hi. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's been a long conference. Thank you for coming to the talk. I should just start with a full disclosure. I'm more of a topologist than a computer scientist, so this is sort of a work in progress, let's say. Also, I didn't realize how hard it would be when I started, which was quite a while ago, and it's still not done. So with that, let me get started. So just basic definitions. Oh, I should also say that I've learned an awful lot at the conference. It's been really nice to see so many beautiful talks. Just wanted to say thanks to everyone before I inflict my talk on you. So let's have S be the surface of genus G with n boundary components. And it's always nice to have examples. So here's S11. If it doesn't have any boundary components, then we can drop the second subscript, and doesn't have to have genus. So there's one of the basic objects of study. Suppose F is a homeomorphism. So actually, I'll restrict to orientation preserving. Then we can build M sub F. So this is the surface bundle over the circle with monodromy F. So what is that? That's S cross I. So just take your surface and thicken it up. And then mod out by gluing points on the back to points on the front. So there's some equivalence relation by the homeomorphism F, the surface bundle. With fiber S and monodromy F. So suppose that I take a copy of S21. So here it is. There's my boundary. There's my two genera. The fiber is always vertical. So we cross it with the interval. And down here, we get an annulus on the boundary. And then we're supposed to take a point on the back, and we get to glue that via F to some point on the front, like so. And the result gives us our manifold of F. Okay, please ask questions, by the way. I encourage questions. So note, if F is isotopic to G, different equivalence relation, then the bundles you get are homeomorphic. So all that matters is the isotopy representative of F. Nothing else matters. So only image of F in the mapping class group. What's the definition of that? This is homeomorphisms up to isotopy. Let's not go into detail what isotopy is. You know, you can wiggle things, doesn't change anything. Doesn't change any of the topology. this is all that matters. So only image of blah, blah, blah in matters. So this is a very good thing. Homeo is some huge group. The mapping class group is a countable, finitely presented group. That's much better, much nicer to work with if you have if you want to do sort of combinatorial topology. So that's good. Let's figure out something about the mapping class group.
Is it like a smooth manifold that you start with?
So, oh, okay. So I'm just going to work with compact connected orientable surfaces, right? And then I'll work with homeomorphisms, right? And that'll give me my gluings. And so I'll always get compact closed orientable manifolds. And then all the categories are the same. So if you have a topological three manifold, a PL three manifold, a smooth three manifold, notions of equivalence, if they're if things are isotopic, they're diffeotopic, and so on. So I just won't worry about those questions. But as we'll see, everything's going to really be sort of PL. I'm going to actually make triangulations. Okay? And if I'm going to triangulate my maps, I'm going to triangulate my surfaces, I'm going to triangulate my manifolds, everything will be PL. Does that answer the question?
Sure.
Is there a question? Okay. Was there, maybe it's not a question, is there a statement? Yeah, all the categories are the same. That's right. So homeomorphisms have smoothings. So mapping class group is generated by twists, actually finally generated by Dane twists and half twists. And this is actually a theorem, so why don't I write Dane and also licorice. Okay. Just for concreteness, so I had some, excellent. So if this is alpha, and here is just a little arc which is running across this annulus, then I can perform the Dane twist, P alpha, and it's always a struggle. Why don't I use left twists to be positive today? Okay? So I have this annulus. And I have a homeomorphism on the annulus, and it fixes the boundary and it twists the inside. So, wow, that was a really big picture. I guess I'll just draw another big picture over here. Here I have a pair of pants, and the two inner boundary components, those are boundary components of my surface. I insist on that. And then I take the outer boundary to be alpha, and then I have my arc, which is how I record things. So a half twist, T one half on alpha. Again, everything twists to the left, like so. Okay? So these are the two basic operations, and we're told by Dane licorice that these actually generate. So if you want to build mapping classes, it's enough just to use these two operations and compose them. And of course, if the surface is closed, then you don't need half twists. So, yes? It fixes all three, it fixes the outer boundary point-wise and it interchanges the two inner boundaries. And that's why I insisted that they were boundaries of the surface to begin with. That's what the little decoration delta is supposed to mean on the inside. If it doesn't fix, if those aren't boundaries of the original surface, then you don't know how to extend it outside the pants. Okay, that's that. So, beautiful definitions. F is periodic if what do we want? There's a k greater than or equal to 1 such that f to the k is isotopic to the identity map. So maybe just a nice concrete example. We have our axis of symmetry right here. And we rotate by 180 about it. So that you do it twice and you get back to the identity, but certainly you do it once, it's not the identity. So here's a nice periodic automorphism. It's reducible if there exists a k greater than or equal to 1, and there exists an alpha in the surface, a central curve, such that f to the k of alpha is isotopic to alpha. So let me not draw a picture here, but let me just say that the canonical example of this is a Dane twist, right? If you look at tau t alpha, that fixes alpha, okay? Up to isotopy. So that's really one of the best examples of reducible. You could, there's other examples, but this, but the Dane twist is really nice. E.g. Dane twist. And then finally, there's Pseudo-Anosov, which in this conference almost doesn't need a definition, unlike most conferences, even with topologists. If there exists a singular E2 metric on S, with respect to which F is hyperbolic. So maybe a picture of that. Here you have a little square in your Euclidean metric, and I'm just drawing some horizontal and vertical lines. And what does it do? It acts hyperbolically, so it stretches one direction. I'm going to do it by a factor of 2, and it shrinks the other direction also by a factor of 2. Okay, so there's a stable and unstable manifold, etc. Okay, great. So, theorem of Thurston. Actually, a whole bunch of theorems of Thurston. And one theorem of Mostow. For all f in the mapping class group, f either periodic, reducible, or PA. And then the next theorem is a is part of the hyperbolization. If f is PA, Pseudo-Anosov, then MF, let's take the interior, just to avoid worrying about boundary components, admits a hyperbolic metric. There's some Kleinian group. So the first theorem is completely comprehensible. There's those three types, and every Pseudo-Anosov, mapping class falls into one of those three types. And then the second theorem is much harder. Well, this one's not totally easy, but this one is harder, which says that if you're Pseudo-Anosov, then there's this wonderful geometric object, which is sitting there, lurking in the background. And then we have a theorem of Mostow and Prasad. Let me just say it this way. The hyperbolic metric on M is unique. Hyperbolic. Let me not be too precise here. but better. And I think I might need to write the name GABA here as well. M is homeomorphic to N if and only if M isometric to N. Let me put it in square brackets so that I can pretend that it's vague. Okay? What's the point? The point is that when you're pseudo-Nosov, there's a hyperbolic metric, and by Moskow rigidity, the geometric invariants you get are topological invariants. So maybe this was a bit of review. Still, it's so beautiful, it's worth contemplating. So we can use that to do computations, right? I mean, if I have a geometric invariant which is easy to compute, then I'll compute it and use that to distinguish or show that there two things are identical. Good. So, of course, that's not me. I won't do that. Jeff Weeks will do that. And maybe this part of the talk could sort of be a warm-up or an advertisement for Nathan's talk later today, where I think that snappy. The second syllable is a little tricky to pronounce sometimes, so it will also get a mention. So what do we do? What does Weeks do? And the gluing equations. And Newton's method. To find hyperbolic metrics. So let me just make sure that we're all on the same page. The input to Jeff Weeks' program is a triangulated manifold. All right? So I'm interested in understanding surface bundles and making lists of surface bundles and figuring out when two surface bundles are the same and when they're different. Okay? And the natural way to give surface bundles is in terms of gain twists, or at least that's a natural way. So SNAP, he wants something slightly different, which is triangulated three manifolds. So we have to turn gain twists into triangulations. So big picture, less interesting, much more interesting,
sure.
And I'll discuss maybe some sort of computer data to support what I just said right there.
Sure.
Okay, all of these, everything here can be generated by Dane twists. So generate a whole bunch of words by Dane twists, let's turn them into manifolds somehow, which I'm going to say, right, feed them to SNAP-P. SNAP-P will tell us which manifolds are hyperbolic, and that will identify the pseudo-Nosov ones. Yes. Oh, yes. Right. So anytime we have two homeomorphisms, we can compose them and get another homeomorphism. Right. Yes?
Quick comment. I don't believe in the first theorem that you formulate, you can claim that F is pseudo-Nosov. But topic is pseudo-Nosov.
Oh, yeah, yes. There exists a singular metric such that it has volume. Okay. So, before I go on and talk about triangulations, I should just mention the SNAP-P senses.
You said
graphs can be generated by...
Every single element of the mapping class group can be generated by twists and half-twists. That's the Dane licorice theorem.
And so, do you know what you're going to get depending on which composition of twists it?
It's like a box of chocolates. Yeah, that'll come up later as well. Is it okay? The first term there is a non-trivial term, let's say, right? Everything's isotopic. Okay. So the snappy census. List of all hyperbolic three manifolds built out of less than or equal to 7 tetrahedra. Trying to build a census of my own, I realized that this is a highly non-trivial task. Let me explain the word cusp. We want to respect the geometry. We don't work with compact manifolds. We work with manifolds which are non-compact, but the ends are controlled. They're of the form torus cross r greater than or equal to 0. Okay? So one way to think about that is you take a manifold, compact manifold with torus boundary, and you just remove the boundary, and that will then be homeomorphic for this thing. So that's what a cusp is. It's just the hyperbolic model of 2 torus cross r plus. Okay? So just a remark about a census. In a census, want complete. You don't miss anything, right? Well, you want correct. There's nothing in the list which isn't a hyperbolic three manifold with less than or equal to 7 tetrahedra. But you want it to be complete. You don't miss anything. And without, I guess I could add correct here, and without repetitions. This is much less important. Right? I mean, if there's a couple extra things in your list, maybe your list is a little longer than it deserves to be, but that's okay, right? I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody to have some extra stuff. But you'd really like it to be correct. Everything on the list actually deserves to be on the list, and complete, it hits everything. Okay, good. So this is kind of hard. All right, so let's talk about Twister. So turn Dane twists into triangulation. So let me just give you some examples. So here's my surface, and maybe I'll draw a collection of curves and some dual curves. Like so. So this is my collection A. And they fill, i.e., S cut along A is a collection of disks. A is tight. So I draw A with no extraneous intersections. So it's tight, right? You can't make the intersection pattern any better. Then you cut along it, and the complement is a collection of disks. Then we say it fills. This is a nice collection. We like this kind of collection. It's really It's not hard to produce such collections. There's lots and lots of them. Here's a particularly beautiful one. So there's one curve. There's the other curve. I learned this from Catherine Blyler. So it's possible to have two curves which go, right, in particular. So once you have a filling collection, or maybe I'll call this B, just so we don't get confused between A and B. So once you have a collection of curves that fills, that's great. Dual to A is a squaring of S. So let me draw the two squarings that you get in these two cases. So for A, you see there's four vertices, two on each of the red guys. So in my squaring, there'll be four squares, and opposite edges are identified, just like in a translation surface, say. Okay, so vertical are glued to verticals, horizontals are glued to horizontals, and the pattern tells you which. Yes?
So is each square a component of the complement?
No, each square, so it's dual to A is a squaring. So each square is a vertex, is an intersection point.
Like in a cross an edge of an arc joint.
That's right. That's exactly right. So anytime you have a, let me draw the other one. So this is from A. This is dual to A. This is dual to B. This one's no longer a translation surface, but a half-translation surface. Let me not make mistakes, so I'll just copy it from my notes. This is glued to that. So horizontal is still glued to horizontal, but you're allowed a half-rotation. This is glued to that. This is glued to that. And finally, this is glued to that. There. So that's the square I get from B. Okay? So anytime you have a collection of curves that fills, anytime you have a particular collection of Dane twists that you want to build manifolds with, then you can build the squaring and feed that to twister, and then feed it a word in those Dane twists, and it will build the manifold as follows. So a letter A in A gives a squared annulus. Maybe it has length 2. So we can twist. Let me twist to the right, because that's what I have in my notes. So if I twist to the right, then this edge goes there, and that edge goes there. Okay? So far, so good. Triangulate by adding diagonals. Oops, let's have these diagonals. Okay, so I can twist my squared annulus. I can equally well twist my triangulated annulus. So I'm going to have to do, this is just doing the twist all at once. Let me do the twist by adding diagonals and then twist by flipping. So what does it mean to flip? You choose the diagonal, which is going the wrong way, and you make it go the right way. So I fixed one of them. Now I fix another one. Now I fix another one. Well, let's fix the center. There it is. So now we have one of the edges that we wanted to get to, right? If I do the Dane twist, then I see the central guy, and the side guy, and they get turned into these guys of slope 1/2. And now I've done flips, and I've finally gotten one guy of slope 1/2. I need to get another guy of slope 1/2, and I do that by doing one more flip, which gets me this guy here. Yes?
So you're explaining how at each step to do some kind of simple modification of the initial triangulation, and then the goal is to get to the final triangulation.
That's right. Well, so this triangulation is the Dane twist of that triangulation, right? And I realized it by doing these flips, one flip at a time. So this is what a Dane twist does. Switch a single diagonal to a single square, and keep flipping diagonals until you get what you want. It's a little harder to figure out what to do when the diagonals don't line up all beautifully the way they do there. But in any case, it is, you know, I may not be able to figure it out, but my computer can do it. So. So just a note, if the annulus has length k, then k squared flips, which sounds very inefficient, but k is 2, so maybe we shouldn't let it bother us. All right, so now we need to build a 3-manifold. By layering tetrahedra. So in other words, if I want to realize this diagonal flip, well, that looks very suspiciously like realize this flip by gluing on. So what do? I take my tetrahedron, and on the top of the tetrahedron, I have the correct thing. On the bottom, I have the wrong thing. I just glue the back to the square that I want to flip the diagonal of. So in other words, I can realize a Dane twist by doing a sequence of layerings. In other words, I can realize a Dane twist by building a 3-manifold. So just a cartoon. If W is an element of A, union A bar star. Oh, of course, if I flip the diagonals in the other way, then I get the opposite Dane twist. So I can get the forward and backwards Dane twist. Build MW, let's say. So what do? So the first step is we take S cross I. So we just take our surface and we thicken it up. Then for every letter in our word W, we glue on one of these speed bump type objects. And if the annuli cross each other, then the speed bumps sort of lie on top of each other. And we do this until we've exhausted our word. Okay? So what do? 1, thicken. 2, S cross I. 2, layer. 3, glue. S cross 1 to S cross 0 by identity. The point is that before and after doing the Dane twist, I have combinatorially identical triangulations, and I keep track of the combinatorial identity. And I just apply that at the end, and I'm done. Actually, I'm telling a little bit of a lie. I glue by the identity before I do any Dane twist at all, and then I pop things open and insert tetrahedra. But anyway, this is maybe easier to explain. Okay, great. So now we have this way of building 3-manifolds. We take words. We can build 3-manifolds. We can feed them to SnapP. and we can make various claims about how many of them there are, and talk about how we did it. So, perhaps true, there are hyperbolic manifolds with a genus 2 bundle structure. Of course, that's not true. There's infinitely many. So with monodromy of length less than or equal to 10. So we can just step back and think for a moment. There's 10 to the 10 words of length equal to 10, just slightly more than that of length less than or equal to 10, right? So we take all those words and we put them in a big bucket and we think about them in various ways. And what comes out the other side is this list of 21,000 hyperbolic guys. Yes?
But aren't there any, there are infinitely many dang twists you could do, right?
There are infinitely many dang twists you could do, but there's only 10 to the 10 things you can do, but, sorry. I'm using A. Okay? Monodromy is a word in A. Okay, good. Min vol at AAA BCD and also at AA BCD E, that's a C, and the volume is 2781, and it shouldn't be a surprise that there's two of them because there's a hyperelliptic involution. So if you take if you have a homeomorphism of the genus 2 surface, you can always post-compose it by hyperelliptic involution. You'll get another manifold with the same volume. Okay? It's actually kind of irritating. It means that, you know, volume's it's not the perfect invariant because, you know, it always comes in pairs in genus 2. Yes? This isn't in the cusp census. And it does appear in the closed census, we can drill it and find out, which I think I've done, and I don't remember right now. In the 10 minutes that remain, let me just discuss how. I should just add my note because I said at the beginning, slightly. Wrong. I mean, the rough number is about right, and this is certainly absolutely correct, because I've gone further than length 10, looking for smaller volumes. Like I said, it's hard to produce a census, and you make small mistakes, and you don't actually have a census. Okay, so.
There is some idea about how this grows as a factor of the length.
I'll say that. That's a great question, and I'll say a little bit more about that in like just a moment. Well, like in 10 minutes. Okay, so what do we need to do? We need to the functions have names in the computer program. It's grow, build, sort, and fit. So this is what we need to do. And I just briefly tell you what those things are, and then you know how everything works. So problem, 10 to the 10 words is far too many. Okay, so we apply a maximal amount of cleverness, which may be a mistake, but it seems to be unnecessary. Try to be very clever. It would be nice to replace cleverness here by brute force, but I don't think that actually works. So what do we do? Generate words by depth first traversal, what a great word, of the tree, the lexicographic tree. So for various reasons, we can take the root to be A, and then there's AA, and then there's AAA, or you could go the other way and you'd see AA. Actually, to be strictly honest, you'd see AA capital A, because that's the ordering that the letters come in, but let's pretend that there's no inverses for the moment, for the sake of this diagram. Etc. So we have this tree. We don't want to build the whole thing. Much too big. We just want to go along it and only print out the leaves that we absolutely have to print out. Only print out the leaves that we can't convince ourselves to throw away. Oop, don't do that. Many tricks. But the most important one is prune bad prefixes. If I had to look at all 10 to the 10 words, well, that's sort of inefficient. Sometimes you can look at a prefix and say, oh, this is bad, for various obvious reasons. Prune bad prefixes using the action of the mapping class group. In fact, I'm going to use a Voronoff's theorem here. Every automorphism in the mapping class group is given by conjugation. So if I can conjugate U, let's say, oh, I guess I was calling it W to an earlier word, then prune W. Just cut it off. Okay? So there's some technicalities here, but in the interest of time, I won't go into them. In fact, there's a large amount of sort of cleverness in combinatorial group theory, which you insert at this step in your desperate attempt to reduce the number of words. Unfortunately, after all this cleverness, produce about 900 words, actually slightly more, per second, which is much too much, way too fast. I'd be much happier if I was producing fewer words. Okay? It's very bad. Why is this bad? Well, I'll tell you why it's bad. That's the growing step, where we build a big list of words. So the next step is to build manifolds, feed lists into Twister, then Snappy. And the point of this is not to do anything complicated, but just to feed it through once and find a few simple invariants which we're going to use to understand the correct order of the words. Right now the words are in lexicographic order, which is not the right order. The right order would be, is in fact, hyperbolic volume. We sort them by hyperbolic volume, and then we'll be much, then our isometry problems become much easier. The problem drops from being some all against all, some quadratic problem, to a quadratic problem inside of small buckets, which is much easier to handle. So this is a great problem. About 10 to 20 manifolds per second. So this is why we're hosed. 900 words a second, that's great if you want to produce a lot of words, but we don't want to produce a lot of words. We want to produce as few words as possible, which we know represent every hyperbolic manifold exactly once. So That's why this code is written so cleverly, and there's just all sorts of kitchen sink tricks thrown in there. I look for, you know, is the word going to be reducible? I mean, I do think that the leaves, if it's going to be reducible, I trim off a leaf. If it's going to, there's all this business about automorphisms, which you can use of the mapping class group to try and conjugate it to be earlier, all sorts of things, and it's still not good enough. We produce too many words, and maybe the solution is to, you know, wait 10 years and buy a bigger computer. I'm not sure. Of course, then I would want to do words of length 11. So.
Buying 9 more computers now.
Right. So this trivially paralyzes. Because if you have, I mean, you could chop this tree into 10 pieces. It's not completely easy to balance, but you could.
This is what you mean, so paralyzing.
Oh, yeah, you could paralyze that too. That's true. Yes.
You weren't happy with words of length 9?
I wasn't happy with ten's much better. 9 is prime. I don't like 9. 10 has some factors. Okay, so well, just to say the last two steps, there's a sorting by volume. Here's a tricky step. Discard. Obviously non-hyperbolic manifolds. Unfortunately, Snappy isn't as rigorous. Well, Snappy's not rigorous, but who cares about that? Snappy's not consistent. And there are certain words that you can find where sometimes it will say that it has a nice triangulation with positive angled tetrahedra, and it's very happy, and it gives you the volumes of high precision. And other times it will say, oh, this has got degenerate tetrahedra, and it gives you the volumes of high precision. And it's the same volume. So you think it's probably a hyperbolic free manifold, but if Snappy say it's degenerate, should I throw it away? Should I not throw it away? I should probably keep it. Anyway, so there's issues here where you'd like to you know, massage the behavior of Snappy a little bit. And then finally, thin. And here you use isometry checker. In Snappy. If Snappy thinks the manifolds have the same volume, then they're probably isometric. And you ask, and you check that. And if they are, then you throw the lexicographically later one away. Everything is rigorous except for this word obviously here. Okay? Yes, question.
Computing the homology.
You know, Snappy, the version of Snappy I have prints out the homology as a string, and I just didn't bother, and then I didn't bother even using it. You could use it, yeah. It would speed things up by maybe a factor of two. This is... So there's lots of things that, okay, so yes, you could use other invariants. I basically just use the volume. Why not? Let me show you now, let me try and answer your question. And your question. I redid up to 8 last night, just so I would show you data. Oh, I have this as well. So on line 10 here, 21340. And the timing is slow. Okay, so we have our very clever, infinitely clever way of producing lists of words. Notice here there's, 10,000, 100,000 words, but our very clever techniques gets it down to 8 and 66 respectively. So that's not so bad. It's because most everything is reducible. when you're that short. And we take these lists of words, and we feed them to Snappy, and you should see right here that it only takes us 9 seconds to build all the words of length 8. It takes us 11 minutes to just compute their volumes. So we're not even doing anything clever. We're not computing isometry. We're not doing anything interesting like that. All right? And then it takes us a long time to figure out, to even after we've sorted them into buckets and we're only comparing like versus like, there's so many different Kanji classes of a single Pseudo-Nosov map that we have to really, the buckets are actually quite big and we have to thin them down. So one thing you can see here, which is supposed to answer one of the questions very early in the talk, like what can you get by doing Dane twists, like that you can get anything, but mostly you get Pseudo-Nosovs, right? I mean, if we pretend that this is somehow a random list, which is maybe not a very good assumption, then after deciding which ones are hyperbolic and which ones are not, most of them are hyperbolic, okay? And in fact, this fraction goes up as you go down here. And then you figure out which ones are hyperbolic, and then you sort them into Kanji classes, and most of them disappear, goes down by a factor of 4. So mostly it's hyperbolic, but they're also mostly conjugate to each other. So I think from doing these experiments, if you walk around randomly mapping class group, it's always Pseudo-Nosov, you know, without any question. You know. Well, yeah, sure. So there's a theorem of, you know, if you do a random walk, then you get Pseudo-Nosovs with probability 1. But it's not just a theorem, it's also true in practice. So thank you very much for your attention. Yeah, it looks like it's growing like a power. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think the answer is yes, and maybe if we thought about it, it would be yes. I mean, you can do some... So if you look at the largest volume manifolds, then they're just obviously sort of figure eight monodromes, which are attached together in various ways. You do a letter, and then you do adjacent letter inverse. And then you go someplace, you do a letter, and you do adjacent letter inverse. So maybe you could just by putting things together like that, and you'd get obvious exponential growth. I have the program running on my laptop. So if there are other applications of Twister, like seeing canonical triangulations or exploring what kind of manifolds each groups build and so on. So if anyone wants to see a demo, I can show you that after. Thanks again.